I think we all know what myths in themselves have to do with Jungian psychology, in the sense that Jung found in them a way through which the collective unconscious spoke creatively to each individual. And creation myths in particular, I think, have quite a bearing on the Jungian approach to the psyche, and so I'd like to say a few things about that, why creation myths, and then in particular why Egyptian creation myths have anything to do with the study of the psyche from a Jungian point of view and the practice of psychotherapy within a Jungian understanding. In part, if you think about the fact that the theme of creativity comes up in Jungian work in two different regards. One is that one might call the individuation process, which is the major goal of Jungian work, a process of self-creation. We don't aim so much for adaptation to society. We aim for understanding who one is as an individual and then relating through that. And secondly, there is an enormous emphasis on the creative within Jungian work. And what's that about? Well, in part, it has to do with how we view the unconscious, seeing it as in itself a creative partner, in a dialogue with us. And we look to its creativity with a willingness to bring our egos to it and meet it through some ego effort. And secondly, since this is not an aesthetic psychology, but is really about life and the unfolding of oneself psychologically, it's important to understand what the purpose is of all the emphasis on creativity in Jungian work. Often an analyst will suggest to an analysand that they draw a picture out of a dream or make a model of some element of a dream, or have an active dialogue with some figure in a dream. And my sense of it is that through that there comes much more direct and immediate a feeling of oneself as really being, of a sense that one indeed is. For in the process of trying to be creative in the service of the psyche, not using the psyche in the service of creativity, but being creative in the service of the psyche, what gets enhanced is a feeling of interiority. One begins to have a sense of oneself as a container. And within that container, then, there's an experience and an opportunity to go through a process of reflection, and through being open to what emerges, to inspiration. That leads us to the sense of otherness within. In Jungian terms, that could lead us to the sense of what Jung called the anima or the animus, the figure of the other gender from the dreamer's ego within. And again, in Jungian terms, it can lead one to a sense of some transcendent center that speaks to one from within. And that it also gives an individual an opportunity to experience some separation. First of all, in order to try to focus creative energy, it requires a going apart from, a going off with oneself. And often it's a way to withdraw from answering the demands of the 10,000 things in the world. And through that going apartness, it also allows one then possibly to go through an experience of separateness and separation, not in the more usual and earlier stage way, which would be through aggression, through rebellion, through defining and experiencing oneself through what was one is against, which is the normal course of separation, as anyone who's ever been a three-year-old or tried to raise a three-year-old knows. You know, that sense of I am who I am because I'm not you, and by saying no, I realize that I exist. But it gives one an opportunity to be oneself through what one is for, through an active engagement and involvement in something that that truly interests one, that focuses one's energy on some exchange between oneself and an otherness, as I mentioned, an otherness in the actual project one may be involved with, and also an otherness within, when one is open and experiences that sense of movement, which we call inspiration.